Hello, I'm Dango Rose, and you're listening to the Mountaineer Podcast in conjunction with the Mountaineer Newspaper, the voice of the Peak to Peak, online and in print. Brought to you by Mountain Vale Media. Now, listen in for the show.
Is the Mountaineer Podcast, and I'm Marianne Rosen, bringing you stories, history, or lore from or about the mountains you live in. This week, our tale from the mountains is actually two tales. At first glance, the two seem to be disconnected and not having much to do with one another. They are, however, each about a seemingly forgotten group of people who actually played a big part in the West, Colorado's, and our own peak-to-peak area's mining industry and history. The first narrative is once again a record about women, and although a few names are mentioned, it is about a group of women who had a lot to do with how some of the towns in our area evolved. There have been many accounts written about the Gold Rush and the towns of Central City, Black Hawk, Ward, and Nederland, and others along the Peak to Peak. With the discovery of gold, silver, lead, copper, zinc, and other minerals, many men went west to attempt to find their fortunes. Mining camps were rough and rowdy, with miners often living in tents on a mining claim. Small, so-called towns sprung up, and these frequently included gambling halls, saloons, and brothels. Men found themselves in places with few women to court and marry. Men far outnumbered women, and many felt the lack of companionship. Simultaneously, the Civil War had left many women bereaved fiancés, girlfriends, and wives. Add to that the fact that many Eastern women faced loneliness, poverty, and the social stigma of spinsterhood. The two situations were a perfect storm. Miners and ranchers saw a need for brides to be brought west from the east. Some sought mail-order brides, even placing ads in newspapers, magazines, and church circulars. As men who were interested in building homesteads and ranches, they wanted wives to join in these new endeavors. There were magazines devoted to finding wives. Many ads were very specific, such as the following one, which was placed in one of those magazines, and quote, "Gentleman of 25 years old, 5 feet 3 inches, doing a good business in the city, desires the acquaintance of a young, intelligent, and refined lady, possessed of some means, of a loving disposition, from 18 to 23, and one who would make home a paradise." End quote. No one knows if anyone responded. Some women made a business of finding proper ladies to bring west, which many found needed the civilizing hands of females. I guess this is sort of a combination of matchmaking, current online dating sites, and Craigslist ads. And as happens today, not everyone was honest in their ads or the letters that they wrote. For women, there was a lot to entice them to head to Colorado. Adventure and marriage and families were the basics. However, Colorado offered many advantages to women that the East did not. Women of Colorado were some of the first in the United States to enjoy full voting rights decades before the passage of the 19th Amendment. Coloradan women voted and served in public offices. Women could also own their own businesses, They could make their own money owning laundries, boarding houses, doing mending, selling food and pies, or owning and working in restaurants. Some made even more than their mining husbands. In places like Colorado, women were allowed to inherit one-third of all land, houses, and household goods, which was not allowed in many places back east. Divorces were not frowned upon as much as they were in other states. Although there was less lawful protection, Colorado mining towns provided women looser societal rules. Some realized that Colorado and the West offered a social equalizing not available in the East. One woman, Constance Ranney, from Ellicott City, Maryland, was a working servant. In writing about a meeting with others heading west, she said, and quote, "Such a challenge was being presented, to go to an uncivilized land and make it civilized. Then it struck me, if I don't do this, I will spend my entire life working as a servant for the rich here." End quote. She also realized that many of the other women interested would never have associated with her, a servant. Yet in the West, they would all be the same, just women looking for husbands, none any better than the other. Instead of Colorado, though, she happened to end up in Oregon. The frontier offered women a myriad of opportunities. The first female governors all hailed from the West, and it was a Western state that elected the first female member to the House of Representatives, Jeanette Rankin, in 1916. All women's circumstances and experiences were different. Some women and men wrote letters back and forth for a period of time in an attempt to get to know one another. In rare occasions, tintype photos were sent ahead. Some, like Jessie Belts, had a relative in the Central City area who knew of the intended groom, Otis Call, and could speak to his reputation. Miss Belts and Mr. Call spent 4 years writing to one another before she moved west. Others married by proxy without knowing one another. Those who went out west first, a few, married right away, while a host of others opted to get to know their grooms face to face before deciding whether or not to marry them. There were concerns that women might be exploited and abused. In order to avoid this possibility, the intended groom would sign a witnessed agreement stating they would not abuse or mistreat the bride-to-be. She, in turn, signed a witnessed promise not to nag or try to change the man. Even with the advantages of living in the mining towns of Central City, Black Hawk, Ward, and Nederland, these brides also endured many hardships. The peak-to-peak area saw hard winters, blizzards, droughts, isolation, summer heat, and insect infestations. All the while, women did the cleaning, cooking, preserving of foods, taking care of children, perhaps worked outside the home, and also established successful farms or assisted their husbands in doing so. Many women who headed west suffered depression, while many found ways to thrive and form community through arts, music, schools, and churches. Some of these marriages worked out, and women were fortunate enough to marry good men and live, as they would say back in the day, happily ever after. Others found themselves in desperate situations that robbed them of their youth and sometimes their lives. They all, however, helped to bring culture to frontier towns by helping to establish churches and schools and to create and a sense of and build more stable and lasting communities. As women arrived and homestead families were started, the Wild West and mining camps like Central City, Black Hawk, Ward, and Nederland began their evolution from places occupied by saloons, gambling halls, mining camps, and brothels into a landscape of towns and communities that we know today. This is not to ignore the role of other women in settling the West, such as homesteaders, Hispanic, or indigenous women. That is another story unto itself for another time. Another group, often forgotten, but who played an important part in Colorado's mining industry and history, is that of immigrants from China. And in the Central City area, especially the story of a particular family. Thousands of Chinese immigrants laid tracks for the railroads connecting our country. Chinese immigrants came to this country for manual labor jobs, arriving in the mid-19th century, mostly to be employed by the Central Pacific, Kansas Pacific, and Union Pacific Railways in order to complete the Transcontinental Railroad. America would not have opened up without the invaluable work of the Chinese on the railroads. When railroad jobs ended, there were many Chinese railroad workers who moved to Colorado and became miners. Many Chinese people became placer miners. Placer mining represented the first phase of Western mining. It was mostly panning creeks and rivers for gold. Placer mining required less financial investment, but did require cooperative mining, muscle, and honest purpose. Such characteristics favored poor Chinese peasants who had little money to invest in expensive claims, yet possessed a strong will. In placer mining, cooperation, not individualism, was the key to success, and the Chinese were seen as outdistancing other groups when it came to sheer cohesion. With no economic advantage, they outdistanced everyone in placer mining. The Chinese population also remained healthier than others in mining communities, where injuries and trauma occurred almost daily. Chinese medicines were sophisticated, and they used molds to cure infections long before the invention of penicillin, while also using herbs to curb certain problems and diseases. Some of Colorado's first big gold camps were established in what is now Gilpin County in the towns of Central City, Black Hawk, and Nevadaville. In 1860, Central City was home to an astounding 10,000 residents. A group of Chinese miners settled in the area to mine and open laundries and restaurants. At the time, about 125 Chinese people lived in the Dostal Alley section of Central City. Considered by others as one of the lowest ethnic groups, they mainly kept to themselves and for the most part were, at the time, left alone. According to a letter written by Joseph Wolfe of Boulder and published in the Rocky Mountain News, the Chinese were tolerated as Chinese labor was attractive because it was cheaper and offered relief to Americans performing hard labor in the West. Chinese laborers were reliable, willing to work longer hours for less pay, all the while making enough money to support their families here and back in China. One particular man of note and a leader in the Chinese community in the Central City Black Hawk area was Chin Lin Su. As is common with Chinese culture, Chin is the family name, which comes at the beginning. Lin Su, born in Canton in southern China somewhere around 1836, left home at between age 19 to 22 and went to California to escape violence during the Chinese Civil War. Chin was an intelligent, physically imposing man standing at 6 feet tall. He had an incredible grasp of the English language, which eventually not only got him employment on the Transcontinental Railroad, but also as an organizer of the San Francisco Chinese population in order to provide them work building the railroad from California to Utah. Eventually, Chin got a contract to work on the Denver Pacific Railroad, and in the early 1870s, he decided to settle in Colorado. He settled in the Central City, Black Hawk area. Because of his mastery of the English language, he ended up supervising other Chinese workers in the area. Chin brought his wife over from China, and they had seven children. His first child, Lily, is considered the first Chinese-American child born in Colorado. Chin Lin Su became a leader in the community of Central City and became wealthy from mining, laundries, and property investment. It has been reported that he was respected by pretty much everyone. Chin had a good reputation as an honest and good man. He was asked both to be the sheriff of Central City and the marshal in Black Hawk. He declined both offers, stating that he had enough trouble being Chinese in the area, let alone being the sheriff or the marshal in the territory. Mostly being left alone did not mean that there was no racism or bigotry toward the Chinese. Newspaper stories at the time reported regular incidents of groups of boys harassing Chinese miners or throwing rocks at the homes of Chinese people. Things escalated in 1874 when fire destroyed most of the wood buildings in Central City on Main Street and the Business District. Because the fire began in the Dostal Alley section, it was originally blamed on a Chinese religious ritual that had gotten out of hand. Although that was not the fire's origin, no one was hurt or killed, and insurance covered most of the rebuilding, people were angry. A mob formed in order to go and tear apart what was left of the Chinese section of town. Chin Lin Su stepped in and, along with some other townspeople, calmed everyone down. This peaceful resolution stood, at the time, in contrast to treatment the Chinese received in other areas of Colorado. However, as the number of immigrants increased, so too did anti-Chinese sentiment. A lot of the problem that the Chinese experienced was that they were competitive, if you will, in the labor market. All of this was tolerated during labor shortages, but when people began to believe that the Chinese were taking jobs that belonged to them during economic downturns, cultural tensions rose. There were some places where the Chinese population had become established, but were now being driven out of. In some places, they were not welcome at all. The Chinese population in Colorado was small. In the 1870 census, Idaho had the largest number of Chinese, but by 1885, the Idaho Statesman newspaper published an article on how to get rid of the Chinese. Bigotry rippled throughout the Mountain West. In 1890, a census showed only 1,398 Chinese living in Colorado. In 2018, the number was still only 45,273. Racism was rampant. Equality and inclusion were not on the radar. Stephen Whittington, a director of the National Mining Hall of Fame Museum, stated that all of that was said about the Chinese to keep them out was all just based on racism. In 1882, Congress passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. This act suspended Chinese immigration and prevented those already in the United States from becoming citizens if they hadn't yet. It was the first legislation in American history to broadly restrict immigration. A very sad state of affairs. In 1943, the Chinese Exclusion Act was repealed, and it was followed by laws that led to an immigration system that better reflected our values as a nation of immigrants. On the 80th anniversary of its repeal, a message was sent out remembering those whose lives, families, and communities were irreparably harmed. In his later life, Chin Lin Su became a merchant in Gilpin County and then in Denver, where he and his family moved. He imported food, clothing, and furniture from China and founded organizations that supported Chinese businesses and the community. Denver's Chinatown was destroyed by a violent white mob in 1880. But Chin remained in the city helping the community. His descendants still live in the area. Although a lot of family history was lost and not recorded, Linda Ju, Chin's great-granddaughter, and her family have worked to ensure that the contributions of Chin and other Chinese immigrants will always be remembered. There has definitely been an exclusion of Chinese laborers from the history of the American West. Rachel Shear, who worked for the Netherland Mining Museum, said that there was not a whole lot of information because much was not recorded. That even she, working at the museum, didn't know much about the Chinese who lived there. But an article at the museum from 1874 references an incident in which 40 men forced the Chinese out of town. The article was written, as many were back then, from the perspective of those in power at the time, wealthy white Protestant males. Even though Chin Lin Su was highly respected, he was not immune to racism or to being stereotyped. In 1977, Chin was honored with a stained glass portrait at the state capitol. He is wearing a red mandarin collar. But his great-granddaughter Linda Ju says that this is a misrepresentation, a stereotype, because he never dressed like that, but always wore a Western suit. Undoubtedly, Chinese immigrants played a part in mining and Colorado history and helped construct the physical and ideological foundations of the state. Two stories, two groups, somewhat forgotten, somewhat a footnote, but who actually played a big role in the history and culture of Colorado, the Peak to Peak, and the towns of Central City and Black Hawk. Until the next Tale from the Mountain. Listen in next time to the Mountain Ear Podcast for another Mountain Tale. I'm Marianne Rosen. Thank you for listening.
And that's it for our show. Subscribe online to get access to more news, weekly updates to our community calendar, and a link to our YouTube channel by visiting themountaineer.com. Be sure to use the coupon code PODCAST when subscribing for a 10% discount, only available to our listeners. I'm Dango Rose. Thank you for listening.